Fusion, the international science radio show.
We have a bouncer and the doors of perception.
The good, the bad, the ugly.
It gets pretty exciting.
The myths, the truths.
Toxicology.
Astro-seismology.
Magnetism. The dark side.
Genetically engineered potatoes.
Planetoid.
Planetoid.
I love that word.
Hello and welcome to Diffusion. Sit back and relax while we inflame your brain with weird and wonderful science. I'm Ian Wolfe. On this edition, we go back to listen to the man who first warned us about the threat of massively super-intelligent godlike machines. But first, here's news of brain fog and robot guide dogs. ME-CFS attacks your brain. Researchers at the Department of Immunology and the National Institute of Neuroscience, National Center of Neurology and Psychiatry in Japan, have found that people suffering from myalgic encephalomyelitis, also known as ME, have immune systems that are attacking their brain. Using free water-corrected diffusion tensor imaging, along with blood analysis, the team found microscopic structural changes and antibodies against specific neurotransmitter receptors in the right frontal operculum of the brains of people with myalgic encephalomyelitis. The right frontal operculum has functions including sensory, motor, autonomic, and cognitive processing. Myalgic encephalomyelitis causes a long shopping list of variable symptoms, from brain fog, which is memory and concentration issues, to coordination, digestive issues, dizziness, immune issues, headaches, sore throat, and many more, all made worse by exertion, just like long COVID. Free water-corrected diffusion tensor imaging is a magnetic resonance imaging technique that measures the rate of water diffusion between cells to understand and create a map of the body's internal structures, specifically the brain. The technique takes advantage of the fact that water moves differently in brain cells depending on the direction of the axon connections between them. The researchers took brain magnetic resonance images and blood samples from 58 people diagnosed with myalgic encephalomyelitis. In the right frontal operculum, they found antibodies to beta-1 adrenergic receptors, which regulate heart rate, beta-2 adrenergic receptors, which regulate increases in bronchodilation in the lungs, ventricular function in the heart, and contraction and dilation of blood vessels, the M3 acetylcholine receptor, which affects insulin and glucose regulation, and the M4 acetylcholine receptor that affects memory, learning, and muscle movement. Exercise stimulates all of these neurotransmitters and their receptors, so this may be part of the cause of post-exertional malaise. This is the hallmark of myalgic encephalomyelitis and long COVID. Post-exertional malaise is the worsening of symptoms following even minor physical or mental exertion, with symptoms typically worsening 12 to 48 hours after activity and lasting for days or even weeks. People and their doctors are often fooled by the time delay into thinking there was no consequence to their exertions. Currently, the best treatment for myalgic encephalomyelitis is pacing, which is to learn how much you can do before hitting the post-exertional malaise ceiling and then try to stay under that ceiling while making sure you get lots of rest in between exertions. Pacing also involves understanding when you absolutely have to do something that will trigger post-exertional malaise and planning for the recovery time, and to not need your resources for something important for a while afterwards. For example, if you have to make your bed and go for a walk, you might want to make sure you make your bed before you go for your walk, because you won't be able to make your bed once you get back from your walk. For some people, it'll be the bed or the walk. The researchers hope that their imaging of the microstructural damage in the brains of people suffering myalgic encephalomyelitis may lead to a diagnostic test for the illness. Any research that helps ME is likely to also help long COVID. The paper was titled Free Water Corrected Diffusion and Adrenergic Muscarinic Antibodies in Myalgic Encephalomyelitis Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, and was published in the Journal of Neuroimaging. Robots leading the blind. There are estimated to be over 250 million people with a vision impairment worldwide. Training a guide dog in Australia costs $50,000 and takes 2 years, with many dogs failing the training. Zongyu Li at the University of California, Berkeley and his colleagues have programmed a four-legged dog-like robot to safely guide people with a lead, even when faced with obstacles and narrow passages. The guide dog robot is based on an MIT mini cheetah robot with vision and voice recognition based on machine learning. It's a little scary looking. The robot has a laser mapping system and a camera fixed on the person being guided, so that the robot knows where the person is. Once given a start point and an end point, the robot software generates a simple route with waypoints. It then calculates its movements on the go, depending on the obstacles and behaviour of the person it's leading, like GPS navigation. Once you've trained one robot guide dog, you can transfer the training to all robot guide dogs, compared to needing to train every individual dog. Their paper was titled Robotic Guide Dog Leading a Human with Leash-Guided Hybrid Physical Interaction. Robotics teacher Naidi Selin in Brazil invented a robot guide on wheels called Lisa that she's selling for around $5,000. In Brazil, there are 6.5 million people with a vision impairment, but only 100 guide dogs. In Brazil, training a guide dog costs around $17,000. Unlike a guide dog, the Lisa robot guide can warn about obstacles above the waist and go around them. Unlike a guide dog, the Lisa robot can warn about obstacles above the waist and go around them. Lisa can also detect potholes in the road and go around them, unlike a guide dog. The Lisa robot weighs 3 kilograms and has a battery that lasts 8 hours and can be recharged by USB, making it compatible with power anywhere in the world. Naida Selin won the Foundation MAPFRE Social Innovation Awards Prevention and Mobility category for her wheeled robot guide. Her startup company Vix System sells the robot, which looks like a wheeled suitcase with a retractable handle and wheels, has a LiDAR laser mapping system, as well as an array of cameras. From the picture, they should add a shopping bag holder at the back, as it looks a lot like a high-tech wheeled shopping bag. The startup has funding from Brazil's Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation, and the Ministry of Communications. They won $200,000 funding from the Brazilian version of the Shark Tank TV show. The Spanish National Research Council, the largest public institution dedicated to research in Spain and the third largest in Europe, has created a dog-shaped robot equipped with artificial intelligence that can serve as a guide dog. They call it Teffy. The robot uses Google to get local traffic information and uses GPS for outdoors navigation and communicates by voice. The robot's artificial vision algorithms can identify traffic signs, traffic lights, streets, people, chairs, table, computers, or QR code information. Its creators believe that as well as people with a vision impairment, the robot could also guide people suffering from dementia. Their idea is that the robot guide could notify its owner of the time that they have a doctor's appointment, then guide the person directly to the doctor's office. The robot could also order a taxi over its mobile phone connection, if required. The guide robot can describe what it sees through its camera and the information it reads from the internet. The designers plan to add gas sensors and blood pressure sensors so the robot can also monitor its user's health and warn about gas leaks. Professor Brian Dew from the University of Copenhagen's research project Blind Tech published a study where he directly compared how one vision-impaired person navigated obstacles with her guide dog versus how the same person navigated the same obstacles in different places with a robot guide dog. He observed that the guide dog and the vision-impaired person exchange signals with each other through the lead harness and leash that were not exchanged with the robot guide dog and the person. While the vision-impaired person and the dog worked as a team, together to navigate around objects, the robot guide dog in the study tended to simply pull the person along behind it. He concludes that therefore a robot guide cannot replace a guide dog. The Blind Tech project uses a Boston Dynamics $50,000 robot dog as featured in the War of the Worlds TV series. Not every person around the world with a vision disability can get access to or look after a guide dog, so an affordable robot guide, while not yet as good as a dog, may be the best option they can access, as long as it doesn't cost $50,000. His paper was titled Guide Dog vs. Robot Dog, Assembling Visually Impaired People with Non-Human Agents and Achieving Assisted Mobility Through Distributed, Co-Constructed Perception, and was published in the journal Mobilities.
You're listening to Ian Wolfe on Diffusion Science Radio. Send emails to science@diffusionradio.com. We're brought to you across Australia on the Community Radio Network and podcast over the internet on www.diffusionradio.com.
Super intelligent machines to kill all humans for some reason? The long-termists have been at it again with vague scaremongering statements. The puppet being used by the long-termers this time is the Centre for AI Safety. They're a non-profit centre that are not associated with any university or any other centre of learning. They're part of the large group of long-termers who fearmonger about the dangers of superintelligent AI to distract from the dangers right in front of us. They have a carefully worded petition that's gathered lots of signatures that reads, "Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside the societal scale risks such as pandemic and nuclear war." No mention of how superintelligent AI can immediately wipe us out, since it doesn't yet exist. Is it going to persuade people to launch nuclear weapons? Why would it do that? Notice no mention of climate in the statement. I think that's deliberate. Do we have wars with nuclear-powered states right now? Yes, we do. Do we have a global pandemic and the threat of more to come? Yes, we do. Do we have a climate emergency that's getting worse faster than we anticipated? Yes, we do. Do we have super intelligent machines right now? No, we don't. Do we have human level intelligent machines? No. Do we have chimpanzee level machines? No. Dogs? No. Mice? No. Ants? No. Now, it won't always be this way, and perhaps we could develop human level intelligent machines. My immediate concern would be for the rights and welfare of these machines. I don't really see why any machines would be motivated or in a position to cause the extinction of the human race. Unless, of course, we've caused them so much suffering on the way to building them that they want to end the human race to stop the danger to them. Superintelligent entities, whether they were humans or machines or aliens, could run rings around the rest of us and manipulate us into doing anything they wanted. However, well before we develop self-aware, superintelligent machines, we will develop machines aware enough and smart enough to suffer. And this is a moral question we should study first, because we might not even notice. And if we do notice, it might be as inconvenient to respect their right not to suffer as it is to respect the rights of poor people, let alone animals. So currently, we can't make machines as smart as a dog or a mouse or even an ant. What shortcuts would we use to get there without all the steps in between? The original idea was that if you could build a self-aware intelligent machine, then it could learn how to improve its programming to be smarter. Or it could design faster hardware for itself and then get faster and faster at making itself smarter and smarter. This is the intelligence explosion, and how some people interpret the concept of the singularity. However, if you were to try and build a super intelligent machine the quick and dirty way, without any of this understanding what intelligence is, how would you go about it? You could try to just copy a human brain into a machine. You could try and get the connectome, the connections between brain cells that encode our memories and abilities and experiences, and copy them into a computer emulation without actually understanding what all the parts do and how they do it. That's still a big ask. There's no telling how slow the computations would need to be to properly emulate the whole thing. Of course, if quantum computers became everyday technology, then a computer copy of a human brain could run very fast indeed on a quantum computer. Quantum computers will be exponentially faster than modern-day computers, not merely millions or trillions of times faster. Try one with 100 zeros after it faster. You'd end up very fast. But if you're just a copied brain, then you'd have to slow down to interact with anyone. You wouldn't be smarter, but you'd have lots of extra time to work things out. The man who wrote the book on this scenario of massively superintelligent godlike machines around 15 years ago is Hugo de Garis, author of The Artelect War. At the Singularity Summit in 2010, I spoke with him about his conviction that either superintelligent godlike machines will kill all humans, or that the people who want to stop the machines being built will wage a world-destroying war against those who want to build the machines. Here's part one of my interview with Hugo from 2010.
Once millions and probably even billions of people in 10, 15, 20 years from now will be asking these questions, and then the next stage will be this species dominance debate. In other words, should human beings build artelects or not? That question will, I see, dominating our global politics this century. So then you can imagine people will take sides. Some people will say, building these super creatures, these godlike creatures, is almost a kind of religion. Not a traditional religion. These beliefs, these ideas are based on science, modern science. So you can almost label it a kind of science-based new religion. So I've coined a couple of labels to label these human groups. The people who want to build these artelects, a sort of god builder. So that group I label cosmists. That's based on the word cosmos, because that's their perspective. The big picture. We live in a universe with trillion stars. Our pathetic little human lives that get snuffed out in a mere 80 years in a universe that's billions of years old. That kind of thinking. So label them cosmists. So the ideology would be cosmism. Now the other group, I label them the Terrans. That's Terra, the Earth, because that's their perspective, much narrower. And the top priority for the Terrans, in other words, the people who are opposed to building these artelects, their greatest motivation would be fear. Fear that perhaps one day, if these artelects came into being, they may become so superior to human beings that they may consider us as nothing. I mean, by analogy, the way we walk around the carpet and we kill bacteria at every step, and we don't give a damn because they're bacteria and we're humans. We feel ourselves so superior to those bacteria, they're nothing to us. So it's an easy, obvious analogy that if these artelects became literally trillions and trillions of times greater capacity than we have, then maybe they may feel the same about us and just not give a damn about us. I mean, maybe they'll either consciously try to exterminate us for whatever reason, maybe for reasons we don't even, we'd never understand because we're too stupid. We're just so humanly stupid compared to them. Or maybe just as a kind of side effect, they may decide to do something, for example, get rid of all the oxygen. And as a side effect, we get destroyed and they're oblivious. They're just so superior to us. It'd be like us not caring about rocks or something, that kind of analogy. Then the species dominance debate heats up, and especially as that IQ gap between human level and robot level, machine intelligence level, as that gap closes, then the debate will rage. Because what's at stake here? On the one hand, the cosmists are arguing, well, this is a kind of god building. This is like the next major step in evolution. There's a whole universe out there. I mean, the big picture. And on the other hand, you've got the Terrans saying, well, the most important thing to human beings is our survival. And so in the limit, when push really comes to shove, if these cosmists are genuine about building these artelects, then in the limit, the Terrans would be prepared to kill them. Right? They will argue that it's the lesser evil to wipe out a few million cosmists for the sake of the survival of billions of human beings, right? So you have two very powerful, murderously opposed ideologies. And I see these two ideologies conflicting each other to the same extent, historically speaking, as what happened in the 19th and 20th centuries when you had the communist and capitalist ideologies over the issue of who should own capital, who should own the factories and the machines, all that production. Should they be privately owned or owned by everybody, communally owned, or basically communism? And we almost destroyed ourselves in a potential World War III in 1962 in the Cuban Missile Crisis. Today, this species dominance issue, it sounds like science fiction. I mean, it's almost impossible for people to imagine some creature that would be like a trillion times above us in mental capacities, thinking a million times faster, like doing a PhD in minutes, you know, this kind of thing. Virtually unlimited memory, unlimited senses. It could go anywhere, turn itself into whatever form it wanted, change its architecture in seconds. Just this godlike creature. So a lot of people will want to do that. Now, there's a third group. You can call them the cyborgs or the cyborgists. They're the people who want to become Artileks themselves by simply adding components to their own brain and so forth. So bit by bit, deliberate pun, they they become Artileks themselves. But very quickly, I mean, there's more computing capacity in a grain of sugar, if you calculate it, compared to the human brain by, I don't know, billions, trillions, something like that. So very quickly, a cyborg, that's part machine, part human, a cyborg very quickly becomes an Artilect. And the proportion of its nature that's human is negligible, absolutely drowned and swamped by this vastly superior computational capacity of the technology. So I see the Terrans, they're the people who are opposed to the Artilects being built. I see the Terrans just simply lumping the cyborg guys, the cyborgs, and the Artileks into the same camp. They will be bitterly opposed to them. Now, Ray Kurzweil, a famous guy, a futurist in America, he's criticized the scenario that I'm giving. He's saying, Hugo, that's me, if it came to a war between the Terrans and the Artileks, or the Terrans and the Cosmists, then it would be sort of like a war between the U.S. Army and the Amish. I don't know if your listeners know. For listeners who don't know who the Amish are, they're a religious sect in America. And part of their religion, ideology, whatever, is to not use any technology more recent than 19th century. So literally, they ride around in horse and buggy. They don't use telephones or internet, you know, that kind of thing. So that they live in the 19th century. So, of course, as the Americans say, no contest, right? Okay, now, in a sense, I agree with what Ray Kurzweil is saying. If the Terrans do nothing, if they just sit around and wait. So if they just sit around waiting, then the Artileks come into being, the cyborgs come into being, and then it would be no contest because the human beings would then be vastly superior. Okay, now with this logic, therefore, the Terrans will argue they have a time window of opportunity. They cannot wait too long. If they do, they're doomed. Or maybe. You know, the risk then is there, because then the Artileks would exist, and then maybe they would like swat us like that's we swat mosquitoes. Maybe treat us as pests. Now, maybe not, but you're not going to take the risk, right? The risk is too great. You're talking about the potential extermination of billions of human beings. No politician is going to accept that risk. So the Terrans will be ruthless. If the Cosmists are dead serious about going ahead and building these godlike creatures, these Artileks, then I see a war coming between the Terrans and the Cosmists. And this ideological difference, this bitter, murderously dangerous confrontation, I believe will happen in the second half of this century, given the timing.
That was Hugo de Garis at the Singularity Summit in Melbourne, discussing whether we will build godlike, massively superintelligent machines and what the possibility means for us all. He is hoping that the discussion of the possibility of an Artilect war doesn't become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You can hear the next parts of the interview over the coming weeks.
And that's all from us this week on Diffusion. Are you a scientist, artist, biohacker or maker who'd like to be interviewed about your work? Would your company like to sponsor Diffusion? Send your contributions, opinions, helpful suggestions, and donations to science@diffusionradio.com. That's science@diffusionradio.com. Please subscribe to the Diffusion Science Radio channel on youtube.com/C/diffusionradio and rate the show on iTunes. Tell your friends. Follow me on Twitter @IanWolf. The news music was Rhinos Theme by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. I produce Diffusion, which is broadcast around Australia to 28 stations on the Community Radio Network, including Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM in New South Wales, 8CCC in Alice Springs and Tennant Creek, 2MVR in Nambucca Valley, 3MVR in the Mallee Border districts of Victoria and South Australia, City Park Radio 7LTN in Launceston, Tasmania, and 2XXFM in Canberra. Diffusion is narrowcast on Indigo FM 88 in northeast Victoria. Diffusion is syndicated globally on astronomy.fm. Subscribe to the podcast on the Diffusion website, www.diffusionradio.com. That's www.diffusionradio.com. And check the website for links, photos, and videos about this week's show. If you enjoyed the show, you can explore more than 1,000 previous episodes archived on diffusionradio.com, where the shows are labeled by keywords so you can focus in on the stories you want to hear. Make a donation through paypal.me/IanWolf or join my patrons at patreon.com/diffusionradio. I'm Ian Wolf. Join us inside your audio device of choice for more science wondering next week on Diffusion Science Radio.
Science is fun. It helps you to learn, to know, and to appreciate. When you study science, you may go on field trips. You discover the marvelous interrelationships between all living things. You learn to read the history of the Earth as it is written in rocks and fossils. You find out what makes things tick. Everything from a molecule to a living organism. In the study of science is found the most useful and satisfying knowledge of man. Knowledge of his physical world, its past, its present, and its future. And in your moments of relaxation, now and in the years to come, you will find the study of science leading you into fascinating pursuits. Photography. Collecting. Why study science? Study science because you will find in the study of science a richer, more rewarding life.